Lane's knees shake as a novice was fixed on her face. "Why do I get the feeling this is not your only reason for coming to see me?" Elaine grimaced, twisting the great serpent ring on her right hand. The right hand. She just had to remember she was Aes Sedai too now. "It's Egwene. The Armerlin, I guess I should say. She's worried, Shiriam, and I was hoping you could help her. You are the keeper, and I did not know who else to go to. I don't have the straight of it completely. You know how Egwene is. She wouldn't complain if her foot was cut off. It's Romanda, I think, though she did mention Lelaine. One or both have been at her, I think, about staying here in Salidar, about not moving yet because it's too dangerous."
"That is good advice," Shiriam said slowly. "I don't know about dangerous, but that is the advice I would give her myself."
Elaine spread her hands in a helpless shrug. "I know. She told me you did, but she didn't say it right out, but I think she's a little afraid of those two. I know she's Armerlin now, but I think they make her feel a novice. I think she's afraid if she does what they want, even if it is good advice, they will expect her to do the same next time. I think, Shiriam, she is afraid she won't be able to say no the next time if she says yes now. And I am afraid of it too. Shiriam, she's the Armerlin seat. She shouldn't be under Romanda's thumb or Lelaine's or anybody's. You are the only one who can help her. I do not know how, but you are." Shiriam was quiet so long that Elaine began to think the other woman was going to tell her every word was ludicrous. "I will do what I can," Shiriam said at last. Elaine stifled a relieved sigh before she realized it would not have mattered. Leaning forward, Egwene rested her arms along the sides of the copper tub and let Chesa's chatter flow over her as the woman scrubbed her back. She had dreamed of a real bath, but actually sitting in the soapy water, scented with a floral oil, felt strange after Aiel's sweat tents. She had taken her first step as Armerlin, marshaled her outnumbered army, and begun her attack. She remembered hearing Ruark say once that when battle began, a battle leader no longer had any real control of events. Now all she could do was wait.
"Even so," she said softly, "I think the wise ones would be proud."
Chapter 38. A Sudden Chill. The blazing sun still climbed behind him, and Matt was glad his broad-brimmed hat gave a little shade on his face. This Altaran forest was winter bare, and more than winter brown, with pines and leatherleafs and other evergreens looking sere, and oak and ash and sweetgum naked. Noon yet to come, the worst heat beyond that, and already the day was like riding through an oven. His coat was slung atop his saddlebags, but sweat made his fine linen shirt cling. Pips's hooves crunched on dead ferns and fallen leaves thick atop the leaf mold, and the band moved in a crackle from the forest floor. Few birds appeared, quick flashes between the branches, and not a squirrel. There were flies, though, and bite-me's, as if this were the heart of summer instead of less than a month to the Feast of Lights. No different from what he had seen back on the Aranin, really, but finding it here, too, made him uneasy. Was the whole world really burning up? Avienda strode along beside Pips with her bundle on her back, apparently unconcerned by dying trees or biting flies, and making considerably less noise than the horse, despite her skirts. Her eyes scanned the surrounding trees, as though she did not trust the band's scouts and flankers to keep them out of an ambush. She had not accepted a ride once, which he had not expected anyway, seeing how Aiel felt about riding. But she had made no trouble either, unless sharpening her knife every time they halted could be considered provocative. There had been the incident with Alvar, of course. Riding the high-stepping gray gelding, Matt had found him among the remounts. Alvar kept a wary eye on her. He had tried to stick his belt knife in her the second night, shouting about Aiel killing his father. Of course, she only took it away from him, but even after Matt cuffed him and tried to explain the difference between Shido and other Aiel, something Matt was not all that sure he understood himself. Oliver glared at her constantly. He did not like Aiel. For Avienda's part, Oliver seemed to make her uneasy, which Matt did not understand at all. The trees stood tall enough to have allowed a breeze to stir under the sparse canopy overhead, but the red hand banner hung limp, and so did the two he had dug out once Rand put them through that gateway into a night-covered meadow. A dragon banner, the red and gold shape hidden in the white folds, and one of those the band called Althor's banner, the ancient Aes Sedai symbol, also thankfully wrapped inside. A grizzled senior bannerman had the red hand, a fellow with narrow eyes and more scars than Derrid, who insisted on actually carrying the banner a part of each day, which few bannermen did. Talmanis and Derrid had supplied second squadmen for the other two, fresh-faced young men who had shown themselves steady enough for a little responsibility. 3 days they had come across Altara, 3 days in forest without sight of a single dragon sworn, or anyone else for that matter, and Matt hoped to stretch their loneliness at least through this fourth before reaching Solidar. Aside from Aes Sedai, there was the problem of how to keep Avienda from Elaine's throat. He had few doubts why she kept sharpening that knife. The edge glittered like gemstones. He was very much afraid he was going to end taking the Aiel woman to Camelin under guard, with the bloody daughter heir demanding he hang her every step of the way. Rand and his bloody women. In Matt's view, anything that slowed the band and kept him from the stew he expected in Salidar was to the good. Halting early and marching late helped. So did the supply wagons at the rear, slow as they were in the forest. But the band could ride only so slowly. All too soon, Vannin was sure to find something. As if thinking his name had been a summons, the fat scout appeared through the trees ahead with four riders. He had gone out before dawn with six. Matt raised a clenched fist, signaling a halt, and murmurs passed down the column. His first order on leaving the gateway had been no drums, no trumpets, no flutes, and no bloody singing. And if there had been a few glum faces in the beginning, after the first day in that wooded terrain, where you could never see clearly more than 100 paces and seldom so far, no one objected at all. Resting his spear across his saddle, Matt waited until Vannin pulled up and casually knuckled his forehead. "You found them?" The balding man leaned to one side in his saddle to spit through a gap in his teeth. He was sweating so much he looked to be melting.
"I found them, 8 or 10 miles west. There's waters in those woods. I saw one take Mar. Just came out nothing in one of those cloaks and swept him out of the saddle. Roughed him considerably, but didn't kill him, though. I expect Ladwin didn't show up for the same reason." "So they know we're here," Matt breathed heavily through his nose. He did not expect either man would hold back anything from warders, much less Aes Sedai. But then the Aes Sedai had to know sooner or later. He had just wanted it to be later. He slapped at a blue fly, but it buzzed away, leaving a spot of blood on his wrist. "How many?" Vannin spat again. "More than I ever figured to see. I got into the village afoot, and there was Aes Sedai faces all over. 200, 300 maybe. Maybe 4. I didn't want to be too obvious counting." Before that shock had time to settle, the man delivered another. "They got an army, too. Camped to the north, mainly. More than you got. Maybe twice as many."
Talmanis and Elysian and Derrid had ridden up during that, sweating and swatting flies and bite-me's.
"Did you hear?" Matt asked, and they nodded soberly.
His battle luck was all very well, yet being outnumbered 2 to 1 with hundreds of Aes Sedai thrown into the bargain could strain any luck.
"We aren't here to fight," he reminded them, but their long faces remained.
For that matter, the remark did not make him feel better either. What counted was whether the Aes Sedai wanted this army of theirs to fight.
"Prepare the band to be attacked," he ordered. "Clear as much ground as you can and use the logs to make barricades."
Talmanis grimaced nearly as hard as Nalesian. They liked to be in the saddle and moving when they fought.
"Think! There may be warders watching us right now."
He was surprised to see Vannin nod and glance off to their right in a significant way.
"If they see us readying to defend,
Then plainly we don't mean to attack. It might make them decide to leave us alone. And if it doesn't, at least we're ready. That got through to Tamanis faster than Elysian. Derrid had been nodding from the start. Giving his oiled beard a twist, Elysian muttered, "What do you intend to do, then? Just sit and wait for them?" "That's what you're going to do," Matt told him. "Burn Rand and his maybe 50 Aes Sedai. Burn him and his loom a little. Intimidate them." Waiting right there until somebody came out from the village to ask who they were and what they wanted seemed a very good idea. No Taviran twisting this time. Any battle was going to have to come to him. He was not about to walk into it. "They are that way," Avienda said, pointing. Without waiting for an answer, she settled her bundle on her back and began striding west. Matt stared after her.
"Bloody Aiel."
Some warder would probably try to take her, too, and have his head handed to him. Or maybe not, warders being warders. If she tried to put a knife in one of those, he might just hurt her. Besides which, if she got to Elaine and began hair-pulling over Rand, or worse, stuck a knife in her... She was moving along quickly, almost trotting, eager to reach Saladar.
"Blood and bloody ashes."
"Talmanis, you have the command until I get back, but you don't stir unless somebody jumps on the band with both boots. These four will tell you what you might have to face. Vannin, you're with me. Alvar, stay close to Derrid in case he needs messages carried. You can teach him to play snakes and foxes," he added with a grin at Derrid. "He tells me he'd like to learn." Derrid's jaw dropped, but Matt had already moved on. A fine thing if he ended up hauled into Saladar by a warder with a lump on his head. How to reduce the chance of that? The banners caught his eye. "You stay here," he told the grizzled bannerman. "You other two come with me, and keep those things furled." His strange little party caught up to Avienda quickly. If anything could convince the warders to let them through unhindered, one look should. No threat in a woman and four men, and obviously making no effort to avoid notice, not carrying two banners. He checked the second squadman. There was still no breeze, but they held the banners clutched to the staffs. Their faces were tight. Only a fool would want to ride in among Aes Sedai and have those spread in a sudden breeze. Avienda glanced at him sideways, then tried to push his boot out of the stirrup.
"Let me up," she ordered curtly.
Why under the light did she want to ride now? Well, he was not going to have her scrambling up and very likely knocking him out of the saddle in the process. He had seen Aiel get on a horse once or twice. Slapping another fly, he leaned down and caught her hand.
"Hold on," he said,
and heaved her up behind him with a grunt. She was nearly as tall as he was, and solid to boot.
"Just put your arm around my waist."
She only gave him a look and twisted about awkwardly until she sat astride, legs bared above the knee, and not at all concerned with it. Nice legs, but he would not have involved himself with another Aiel woman, even if she was not moonstruck over Rand. After a time, she spoke to his back.
"The boy, Alvar. The Shido killed his father?"
Matt nodded without looking around at her. Would he even see any warders before it was too late? Leading the way, Vannin rode slumped like a sack of suet, as always, but he had a sharp eye out.
"His mother died of hunger?" Avienda asked.
"That or maybe sickness."
Warders wore those cloaks that could blend into anything. You could walk past one without seeing him.
"Alvar wasn't too clear, and I didn't press him. He buried her himself."
"Why? You think you owe him something since Aiel cost him his family?"
"Oh?"
She sounded startled.
"I killed neither, and if I had, they were tree killers. How would I have toe?"
Without a pause, she went on, as if continuing in the same line.
"You do not care for him properly, Matt Cawthon. I know men know nothing about raising children, but he is too young to spend all of his time with grown men."
Matt did look at her then, and blinked. She had her head kerchief off, and was busily running a polished greenstone comb through her dark reddish hair. That seemed to be taking all her concentration. that and not falling off. She had donned an intricately worked silver necklace, too, and a wide bracelet of carved ivory. Shaking his head, he went back to studying the forest. Aiel or not, they were all alike in some ways. If the world is ending, a woman will want time to fix her hair. If the world's ending, a woman will take time to tell a man something he's done wrong. It would have been enough to make him chuckle, if he was not so busy wondering whether warders were watching him right that moment. The sun climbed to its zenith and tipped over by the time the forest gave way abruptly. Fewer than 100 paces of cleared ground separated trees from village, and the ground looked as if it had not been cleared long. Saladar itself was a considerable village of gray stone buildings and thatched roofs, and the streets were full and busy. Matt shrugged into his coat. The finest green wool, embroidered with gold on cuffs and tall collar, it should be good enough to meet Aes Sedai in. He left it hanging open, though. Even for Aes Sedai, he would not die from heat. No one tried to stop him as they rode in, but people paused, and every eye turned to him and his strange little company. They knew, all right. Everyone knew. He gave up counting Aes Sedai faces after reaching 50. That number was reached too quickly for any peace of mind. There were no soldiers in the crowd, unless you counted warders, some in those color-shifting cloaks, some fingering a sword hilt as they watched him pass. No soldiers in the village simply meant they were all in the camps, Vannin had mentioned. And all the soldiers being in the camps meant they were ready to do something. Matt hoped Talmanis was holding to his instructions. Talmanis had some sense, but he could be almost as eager to go off and charge somebody as Nalesian. He would have left Darrett in charge. Darrett had seen too many battles to be eager, but the nobleman would never have stood for it. There did not seem to be any flies in Saladar either. Maybe they know something I don't. A woman caught his eye, a pretty woman in odd clothes, wide yellow trousers and a short white coat, her golden hair in an elaborate braid to her waist. She was carrying a bow, of all things. Not many women took up the bow. She saw him looking and ducked down a narrow alleyway. Something about her tickled his memory, but he could not say what. That was one trouble with all those old memories. He was always seeing people who reminded him of somebody who turned out to be 1,000 years dead when he finally figured it out. Maybe he had even really seen somebody who looked like her. Those holes in what he remembered of his own life were fuzzy around the edges. Probably another hunter for the horn, he thought wryly, and put her out of his head. There was no point in riding about until somebody spoke, because it seemed nobody was going to. Matt reined in and nodded to a thin, dark-haired woman who looked up at him, coolly questioning. Pretty, but too skinny for his taste, even without that ageless face. Who wanted to be poked by bones every time you gave a hug? "My name is Matt Cawthon," he said neutrally. If she wanted bowing and scraping, she could take a leap, but antagonizing her would just be foolish. "I'm looking for Elaine Tracand and Egwene Alvere, and Nynaeve Almira, I suppose." Rand had not mentioned her, but she had gone off with Elaine, he knew. The Aes Sedai blinked in surprise, yet serenity returned in a flash. She studied him and the others, one by one, pausing on Avienda. Then looked at the squadmen so long, Matt wondered whether she could see the dragon and the black and white disc through the folded cloth. "Follow me," she said finally. "I will see whether the Ammerlin seat can see you." Gathering her skirts, she started up the street. As Matt heeled Pips to follow, Vannin let his dun drop back and muttered, "Asking Aes Sedai for anything is never a good notion. I could have shown you where to go." He jerked his head toward a 3-story stone cube ahead. "They call it the Little Tower." Matt shrugged uneasily. The Little Tower? And they had somebody here they called the Ammerlin Seat? He doubted the woman had meant Elida. Rand was wrong again. This lot were not frightened. They were too puffed up crazy to be frightened. In front of the stone cube, the skinny Aes Sedai said peremptorily, "Wait here," and vanished inside. Avienda slipped to the ground, and Matt followed quickly, ready to grab her if she tried to dart away. Even if it cost him a little blood, he was not going to let her run off and slit Elaine's throat before he even had a chance to talk to this so-called Ammerlin. But she only stood there, staring straight ahead with her hands folded at her waist and shawl looped over her elbows. She looked completely at her ease, but he thought she might well be terrified out of her skull. If she had any sense, she was. They had collected a crowd. Aes Sedai had begun gathering, closing them in against the front of their little tower, silently peering at him, and the arc of women thickened the longer he stood there. Actually, they seemed to peer at Avienda as much as him, but he felt all of those cool, unreadable gazes. He barely stopped himself from fingering the silver fox head hanging beneath his shirt. A plain-faced Aes Sedai pushed to the front of the crowd, leading a slender young woman in white with big eyes. He vaguely remembered Anaya, but she hardly seemed interested in him at all. "Are you sure, child?" she asked the novice. The young woman's mouth tightened slightly, but she certainly let no irritation into her voice.
"He still seems to glow, or shine. I really do see it. I just don't know why."
Anaya gave her a delighted smile.
"He's Tavirin, Nicola. You've uncovered your first talent. You can see Tavirin. Now back to the class with you. Quickly. You don't want to fall behind."
Nicola bobbed a curtsy, and with a last glance at Matt, burrowed away through the encircling Aes Sedai. Anaya turned her gaze on him then, one of those Aes Sedai gazes that were meant to unsettle a man. It unsettled him right enough. Of course, some Aes Sedai knew about him. Some knew a good deal more than he could wish, and come to think of it, he seemed to remember that Anaya was one of those. But having things announced that way, in front of the light knew how many women with those cool Aes Sedai eyes. His hands stroked the carved haft of his spear. Foxhead or no foxhead, there were enough of them to simply lay hands on him and carry him off.
Bloody Aes Sedai. Bloody Rand.
He only held Anaya's interest for a moment, though. Stepping up to Avienda, she said,
"And what is your name, child?"
Her tone was pleasant, but it expected an answer and no delay about it. Avienda faced her squarely, a head taller and using every hair of it.
"I am Avienda of the Nine Valleys Sept of the Tardad Aiel."
Anaya's mouth quirked toward a smile at the note of defiance. Matt wondered who was going to win that staring match. But before he could make a bet with himself, another Aes Sedai joined them, a woman whose bony-cheeked face gave an impression of age despite smooth cheeks and glossy brown hair.
"Do you be aware you can channel, girl?"
"I am,"
Avienda said curtly and snapped her mouth shut as if intending to say no more. She concentrated on adjusting her shawl, but she had said enough. Aes Sedai swarmed in around her, crowding Matt away.
"How old are you, child? You have developed much strength, but you could learn very much as a novice. Do many Aiel girls die of a wasting sickness when they are a few years younger than you? How long have you—" You must.
Nynaeve appeared in the doorway so suddenly she seemed to pop out of the air. Planting her fists on her hips, she stared at Matt.
"What are you doing here, Matrim Coffin? How did you get here? I suppose it's too much to hope you have anything to do with this army of dragonsworn that's about to descend on us."
"Actually," he said dryly, "I'm in command."
"You—"
Nynaeve stood there with her mouth open, then gave herself a shake, tugging at her blue dress as if it had been disarrayed. It was cut lower than anything he remembered seeing her wear before, low enough to show cleavage, with yellow scrollwork around the neckline and hem. Altogether different from what she had worn back home.
"Well, come with me," she said sharply. "I'll take you to the Ammerlin."
"Matt Cawthon,"
Avienda called, a touch breathily. She was looking over and around Aes Sedai to find him.
"Matt Cawthon!"
Just that, but for an Aiel, she looked frantic. The Aes Sedai surrounding her kept right on, voices calm, reasonable, and relentless.
"For you, the best thing, it is to—"
"You must consider much the best. You can hardly think of—"
Matt grinned. She might pull her knife in a moment, but in that crowd he doubted it would do her much good. She would not be hunting up Elaine any time soon, that was for sure. Wondering whether he would return to find her wearing a white dress, he tossed his spear up to Vannin.
Lead on, Nynaeve. Let's see this Ammerlin of yours.
She gave him a tight frown and led him inside, tugging at her braid and muttering only partly to herself.
This is Rand's doing, isn't it? I know it is. Somehow it is. Frightening everybody half out of their wits.
You just watch your step, Lord General Cawthon, or I swear you'll wish I'd caught you stealing blueberries again. Frightening people. Even a man should have more sense. You stop that grinning, Matt Cawthon. I do not know what she's going to make of this.
There were Aes Sedai at the tables inside. It had the feel of a common room to him, even with those careful Aes Sedai scribbling or handing out orders, but they hardly more than glanced at him and Nynaeve as they crossed the room. It only went to show what a rare show they were running here. Anne accepted stalking through, muttering to herself, and not one of those Aes Sedai said a word. He had stayed in the tower as short a time as he could manage, but he knew that was not the way Aes Sedai ran things. At the rear of the room, Nynaeve pushed open a door that had seen better days. Everything in the place seemed to have seen better days. Matt followed her in and stopped dead. There was Elaine, pretty as anything with that golden hair, but playing at the grand lady with every inch of her, in green silk with a high lace neck, and one of those condescending smiles and raised eyebrows. And there was Egwene, seated behind a table, a questioning smile on her face, and a seven-striped stole over her pale yellow dress. Taking a quick peek outside, he shoved the door to before any of the Aes Sedai could see in.
"Maybe you think this is funny," he growled, crossing the bit of carpet as fast as he could step. "But they'll have your hide if they find out. They'll never bloody let you go, any of you, if they—"
Snatching the stole from Egwene's neck, he hauled her hurriedly out of the chair, and the silver fox head went dead cold against his chest. Giving Egwene a small shove away from the table, he glared at them. Egwene only looked puzzled, but Nynaeve's mouth was hanging open again, and Elaine's big blue eyes looked ready to pop out onto the floor. One of them had tried to use the power on him. The only good thing that had come out of his trip into that Turangreal was the foxhead medallion. He supposed it had to be a Turangreal too, but he was grateful for it just the same. So long as it touched his skin, the one power could not reach him. Not Sayadar, anyway. He had more proof of that than he cared for. It did go cold when someone tried, though. Tossing the stole and his hat onto the table, he sat down, then hiked up from the seat to pull out some cushions and throw them on the floor. He rested a boot on the edge of the table and regarded the fool women.
"You'll need those cushions if this so-called Ammerlin finds out about this little joke of yours."
"Matt," Egwene began in a firm voice, but he cut her off.
"No! If you wanted to talk, you should have talked instead of lashing out with your bloody power. Now you can listen."
"How did you?" Elaine said wonderingly. "The flows just vanished."
At almost the same instant, Nynaeve said in a threatening tone,
"Matt Cawthon, you are making the biggest—" "I said listen!"
He poked a finger at Elaine.
"You, I'm taking back to Camelin, if I can keep Avienda from killing you. If you don't want that pretty throat slit, you stay close to me and do what I say. No questions."
The finger shifted to Egwene.
"Rand says he'll send you back to the Wise Ones whenever you want, and if what I've seen so far is any indication what you get up to, my advice is to take him up on it now."
"It seems you know how to travel,"
Egwene gave a little start,
"so you can make a gateway to Camelin for the band. I don't want any argument, Egwene. And you, Nynaeve, I ought to leave you here, but if you want to come, you can. Only I'm warning you, you yank that braid at me just once, and I swear I'll warm your bottom."
They were staring at him as if he had sprouted horns like a trollic. But at least they were keeping their mouths shut. Maybe he had managed to get a little sense into their heads. Not that they would ever thank him for saving their hides. Oh no, not them. As usual, they would say they would have worked everything out for themselves in just a little while longer. If a woman told you you were interfering when you pulled her out of a dungeon, what would she not say? He drew a deep breath.
"Now, when the poor blind fool they've chosen out for their Ammerlin gets here, I will do the talking. She can't be very bright, or they'd never been able to shove her into the job. Ammerlin seat for a bloody village in the middle of bloody nowhere? You keep your mouth shut and curtsy for all you're worth, and I'll pull your bacon off the coals again."
They just stared. Good.
I know all about her army, but I have one, too. If she's crazy enough to think she can take the tower away from Elida, well, she probably won't risk any losses just to hold on to you three. You make that gateway, Egwene, and I will have you in Camelin tomorrow, the next day latest. And these madwomen can run off and get themselves killed by Elida. Maybe you'll have some company. They cannot all be mad. Rand's willing to offer sanctuary, a curtsy, a quick oath of fealty, and he'll keep Elida from putting their heads on pikes in Tarvalin. They can't ask for better than that. Well, anything to say? They did not even blink, as far as he could see. A simple thank you, Matt, would do. Not a word. Not a blink. A timid tap on the door was followed by a novice, a pretty green-eyed girl who dropped a deep curtsy, all wide-eyed awe.
I was sent to see if you wanted anything, Mother. For the general, I mean. Wine, or... No, Tabitha.
Egwene pulled the striped stole from under his hat and settled it on her shoulders. I want to talk with General Cawthon alone a little longer. Tell Shiriam I will send for her shortly to advise me. Close your mouth before you catch flies, Matt, Nynaeve said, in tones of deepest satisfaction.
Chapter 39 Possibilities. Adjusting her stole, Egwene studied Matt. She expected him to look like a cornered bear, but he just looked poleaxed and sweaty. There were so many questions she wanted to ask. How did Rand know about Celidar? How could he possibly know she had worked out traveling? What did Rand think he was doing? But she was not going to ask them. Matt and his band of the Red Hand had her head buzzing. Maybe Rand had handed her a gift from the sky. My chair, she said quietly. She hoped he had not noticed that she was not sweating, nor Elaine or Nynaeve. Nynaeve not very much, anyway. Swan had revealed the trick, nothing to do with the power at all, just a matter of concentrating in a certain way. Nynaeve had been rather angry, small surprise, that Swan had not taught it to them before, but Swan just replied calmly that it was for Aes Sedai, not accepted. So far Egwene had managed to hold her thoughts properly when there were sisters about, and a cool face instead of a sweaty did seem to help their attitudes a little. Some of them. It should do wonders for Matt, if he ever stopped staring and saw. Matt, my chair? He gave a start, then rose and moved aside, wordlessly staring from her to Elaine to Nynaeve as though they were some sort of puzzle. Well, Nynaeve and Elaine were looking at him in much the same way, and they surely had better reason. She dusted the cushions before replacing them in the chair with a fond thought for Chesa. After 2 days she did not need them any longer, not really. But either she gave up bathing or accepted cushions until not a hint of a bruise showed. Chesa would remove the cushions if Egwene said to. Sweaty face or cool, Egwene was the Ammerlin seat, before whom kings bowed and queens curtsied, even if none had yet. Who would have Elida tried and executed in short order and all put right with the White Tower and thus with the world? Chesa would do it, and give Egwene such hurt, reproachful glances for not being allowed to take care of her that leaving the cushions there was much easier to bear. Settling herself with her hands folded on the table, she said, Matt, he broke in immediately. This really is madness, you know, he said quietly. Quietly, but quite firmly. You will end with your head off, Egwene. All of you will. Your heads cut off. Matt, she said in a stronger tone, but he went right on. Listen, you can still get out of this. If they think you're the Ammerlin, you can come out with me to inspect the band. You make a gateway and we'll be gone before this bunch of goat-brained lunatics can blink. Nynaeve had seen Sidar fail around him, but she had dealt with recalcitrant men long before she learned to channel. With a muttered growl of, "Warm my bottom," that Egwene did not think was intended to be heard, Nynaeve deftly hiked up her skirts and kicked Matt squarely in his, so hard that he staggered all the way to the wall before catching himself with a hand. Elaine burst into laughter and suppressed it just as quickly, but she still quivered, and her eyes shone. Egwene bit her lip to keep from laughing, too. It really was comical. Matt turned his head slowly to stare at Nynaeve, all wide-eyed indignation and outrage. Then, his brows lowered, and jerking his undone coat as if to straighten it, he began to stalk slowly toward her. Slowly, because he was limping. Egwene covered her mouth. It really would not do to laugh. Nynaeve drew herself up sternly, and then perhaps a few things occurred to her. She might be angry enough to channel, but Sidar was apparently useless with him. Matt was tall for a Two Rivers man, considerably taller than she, considerably stronger, and there was a decidedly dangerous glint in his eye. She glanced at Egwene and smoothed her dress, trying to maintain her stern face. Matt stalked nearer, face like thunder. Another hasty glance, worry beginning to show, was followed by a small step back. "Matt," Egwene said in a level tone. He did not stop. "Matt, stop cutting the fool. You are in quite a predicament, but I should be able to get you out of it if you listen to reason." Finally, he halted. With a glare and a warning shake of his finger at Nynaeve, he turned his back on her and planted his fists on the writing table. "I am in a predicament? Egwene, you've jumped out of a tree toward a bear pit, and you think everything is fine because you haven't landed yet." She smiled at him calmly. "Matt, not many here in Salidar think very well of Dragonsworn. Lord Bryn certainly doesn't, nor his soldiers. We have heard some very disturbing stories, and some sickening ones." "Dragonsworn?" he yelped. "What do they have to do with me? I'm no bloody Dragonsworn." "Of course you are, Matt." She made it sound the most obvious thing in the world, which it was, if you only thought. "You go where Rand sends you. What else are you but Dragonsworn? But if you listen to me, I can stop them from putting your head on a pike. Actually, I don't think Lord Bryn would use a pike. He always complains he doesn't have enough, but I am sure he would figure out something." Matt looked at the other two women, and Egwene compressed her lips for an instant. She had made herself plain, but he appeared to be hunting for a clue to what she was talking about. Elaine gave him back a tight smile and a decisively confirming nod. She might not see where Egwene was going, yet she knew she was not talking for the sound of her voice. Nynaeve, still struggling to keep a severe face and tugging at her braid, only glared at him, but maybe that was even better. Though she was beginning to sweat, Nynaeve lost concentration when she grew angry. "Now listen, Egwene," Matt said. Then again, maybe neither response was really enough. He managed to combine a reasonable tone with indulgence in the most offensive way possible. "If you want to call yourself Amyrlin, you can call yourself Amyrlin. Rand would welcome you with open arms in Camelin, even if you don't bring all these Aes Sedai to him. But I know he will be overjoyed if you do. Whatever your problems are with Elaida, he can work them out. She knows he's the Dragon Reborn. Light, you remember her letter? Why, you will have your White Tower all mended before you can say Jack of the Wisps. No battles, no bloodshed. You know you don't want bloodshed, Egwene." That she did not. Once the first blood was shed between Salidar and Tar Valon, it would be difficult to make the tower whole again. Once the first Aes Sedai blood was shed, it might be impossible. Still, Elaida had to be brought down, and Egwene would do what she had to do. She just did not like it. And she did not like Matt telling her what she knew, liked it the less so for being right. Definitely the less so in that tone. It was a real effort to keep her hands still on the table. She wanted to stand and box his ears. "However I deal with Rand," she said coolly, "you can be sure it will not be by leading Aes Sedai to swear fealty to him or any other man." Cool, and not at all arguing, a calm statement of simple facts. "How I deal with Elaida is my concern and none of yours. If you have any sense at all, Matt, you will keep your mouth shut as long as you are in Salidar and walk small. You start telling other Aes Sedai what Rand is going to do just as soon as they kneel to him, and you might not like the answers you get. Talk about carrying me off, or Nynaeve, or Elaine, and you will be very lucky not to get a sword through you." He jerked upright with a glare. "I'll talk to you again when you're ready to listen to reason, Egwene. Is Tom Marilyn around?" She gave a curt nod. What did he want with Tom? Probably to douse himself in wine. Well, good luck to him finding a tavern here. "When you're ready to listen," he repeated grimly, and stalked, limped, to the door. "Matt," Elaine said, "I would not try to leave, were I you. Getting into Salidar is much easier than getting out." He grinned at her insolently, and the way he eyed her up and down, he was lucky Elaine did not slap him hard enough to loosen all his teeth. "You, my fine lady, I am taking back to Camelin if I have to tie you up in a package to hand to Rand. Burn me if I don't. And I will bloody well leave when I choose." His bow was mocking, to Elaine and to Egwene. Nynaeve got only a glower and another shake of his finger. "How can Rand have such a low, insufferable lout for a friend?" Elaine asked no one in particular, before the door was well closed behind him. "His language has certainly slipped downhill," Nynaeve grumbled darkly, tossing her head so her braid swung over her shoulder. Egwene thought she might be afraid she would pull it out by the roots if she did not put it out of reach. "I should have let him do as he wanted, Nynaeve. You have to remember your Aes Sedai now. You can't go around kicking people or boxing their ears or thumping them with sticks." Nynaeve stared at her, mouth working, face growing redder and redder. Elaine began assiduously studying the carpet. With a sigh, Egwene folded the striped stole and laid it on the table to one side. That was her way of making sure Elaine and Nynaeve remembered they were alone. Sometimes the stole made them start talking to the Ammerlin seat instead of Egwene Alvear. As usual, it worked. Nynaeve took a very deep breath. Before she could speak, though, Elaine said, "Do you mean to join him and this band of the Red Hand to Gareth Bryn?" Egwene shook her head. The warders said there were 6,000 or 7,000 in Matt's band now, more than she remembered from Cairhien, and a considerable number, if not nearly so many as those two captured men claimed. But Bryn's soldiers truly would not take kindly to Dragonsworn. Besides, she had her own scheme, which she explained while they drew the other chairs to the table. It was very like sitting in a kitchen talking. She moved the stole farther over. "That is brilliant," Elaine's grin said she meant it. But then Elaine always said what she meant. "I didn't think the other would work either, but this really is brilliant." Nynaeve sniffed irritably. "What makes you think Matt will go along? He'll stick a pole through the spokes just for the fun of it." "I think he made a promise," Egwene said simply, and Nynaeve nodded. Slowly, reluctantly, but she nodded. Elaine looked lost, of course. She did not know him. "Elaine, Matt does exactly as he pleases. He always has." "No matter how many turnips he had to peel for it," Nynaeve muttered, "or how often he was switched." "Yes, that is Matt," Egwene sighed. He had been the most irresponsible boy in Emmons Field, maybe in the Two Rivers. But if he gives his word, he keeps it. And I think he promised Rand to see you back in Camelin, Elaine. You notice he retreated to asking me, in a way he had, but you he never changed a hair on. I think he'll try to stay as close to you as your belt pouch, but we won't let him even see you unless he does as we want. She paused. Elaine, if you want to go with him, you can. To Rand, I mean. As soon as we squeeze all the good out of Matt and his band. Elaine hardly hesitated before shaking her head, and she shook it firmly. No, Ebudar is too important. That had been one victory, surprisingly one with a mere suggestion. Elaine and Nynaeve were to join Merlilla at Tylin's court. At least if he stays close, I'll have a few days to try for a look at the Turangreal he is carrying. It has to be that, Egwene. Nothing else could explain it. Egwene could only agree. She had simply meant to wrap him up in air where he stood, just a gentle reminder of who he was trying to manhandle, but the flows touched him and melted. That was the only way to explain it. They ceased to exist where they touched him. She still felt the shock of that moment, remembering, and she realized she was not the only one suddenly adjusting skirts that needed no adjusting. "We could have some warders turn out his pockets." Nynaeve sounded more than satisfied with the image. "We'll see how Master Matt Cawthon likes that." "If we take things away from him," Egwene said patiently, "don't you think he might balk when we start telling him what to do?" Matt had never taken orders very well, and his usual response to Aes Sedai and the One Power was to take the first chance to slip away. Maybe his promise to Rand would stop that. There had to be one. Nothing else explained his behavior, but she was not going to risk it. Nynaeve nodded, rather grudgingly. "Maybe..." Tapping her fingers on the table, Elaine stared at nothing thoughtfully for a moment. "Maybe we could take him to Ebu Dar. That way I might have a better chance at the Turangrial, though if it stops Sidar, I can't see how I'll ever manage to study it." "Take that young ruffian along?" Nynaeve sat up straight. "You can't mean it, Elaine. He would make every day a misery. He's very good at that. He'll never do what he's told. Besides, he will never stand still for it. He's so wrapped up in taking you to Camelin, you could not budge him from it with a pry bar and a team of horses." "But if he means to keep an eye on me until I reach Camelin," Elaine told her, "he'll have no choice but to go. It is perfect." "It might not be a bad idea," Egwene put in, while Nynaeve was searching for another argument. Sending them after the bull still seemed right, but the more she thought of where they would have to search, the more she worried. "A few soldiers might be a very good idea, unless you've picked out warders without letting me know. Tom and Julin are all very well, and Birgitta, but it is a rough place you're going." "A few soldiers might be well enough," Elaine said, coloring slightly. "So long as they know to follow orders." Nynaeve did not quite glance at Elaine, but there was a distinct pause before she shook her head irascibly. "We're hardly going to be fighting duels, Egwene, however touchy these Ebu Dari are. Tom and Julin will do quite well enough. Myself, I think all these stories we've been hearing are just meant to make us decide to give it over." Everybody had heard tales of Ebu Dar since word had spread that they were going. Chesa had heard several, each more pitiful and horrific than the last, strangers killed for a wrong glance before they could blink, women widowed and children orphaned over a word, women fighting in the streets with knives. No, if we could survive Tanchico with just Tom and Julin, and Leandrin and some of her black sisters around in the bargain, we will do very well in Ebu Dar without Matt Cawthon or any soldiers either. Matt commanding soldiers? He never even remembered to milk his father's cows unless he was put on the stool and handed the bucket. Egwene gave a faint sigh. Any mention of Birgitta did that. They started as if goosed, then either stammered around her or else went on as if she had not been mentioned at all. One look had convinced Egwene that the woman following Elaine and Nynaeve about, especially Elaine for some reason, was the woman she had seen in Telairun Riod. Birgitta of the legends, the archer who never missed, one of the dead heroes awaiting the call of the Horn of Valir. A dead hero, not a live woman walking the streets of Saladar, but the same woman nonetheless. Elaine still had provided no explanation, only a careful, embarrassed mumble about not being able to talk of what they had agreed not to talk of. Birgitta herself, the hero of legends, turned the other way or went down alleys if she saw Egwene coming. Ordering the woman to her study and demanding an explanation was out of the question. She had promised, after all, no matter how much a fool the situation made her feel. Anyway, there hardly seemed any harm. She just wished she knew the why of it, and the how. Putting Birgitta out of her mind for the moment, she leaned across the table toward Nynaeve. "Perhaps we can't make Matt take orders exactly, but wouldn't it be fine to watch him smolder over having to be your bodyguard?" "It would certainly be worthwhile," Elaine said thoughtfully, "if Rand really has made him a general. Mother often said the best men were reluctant to take orders, and always worth teaching to. I can't see Matt as one of the best. Linny says fools only listen to themselves. But if we can teach him enough that he doesn't make a complete fool of himself where there is nobody to rescue him, we will be doing Rand a large favor. Besides, I need time if I am to study that Turangrial. Egwene tried not to smile. Elaine always caught on so quickly. Then again, she probably was going to try teaching Matt to sit up straight. That would be something to see. She liked Elaine and admired her strength, but she would bet on Matt in that contest by a whisker. Nynaeve gave ground stubbornly. Matt was wrong-headed. He would say down if they said up just to spite them. He could make trouble nailed up inside a barrel. They constantly would have to be dragging him out of taverns and gambling dens. Toward the end, she was reduced to claiming that Matt would probably pinch Elaine the first time her back was turned, and Egwene knew they were overcoming her objections. Matt certainly gave a lot of time to chasing after women, which Egwene could hardly approve. But Nynaeve surely knew as well as she that for all of looking when and how he should not, he seemed to have an uncanny knack for picking women who wanted to be chased, even the most unlikely. Unfortunately, just when she was sure that Nynaeve was about to give in, a knock at the door announced Shiriam. Shiriam did not wait on permission to enter. She never did. Cool-eyed in her blue stole, she paused to gaze at Nynaeve and Elaine. Second to the Ammerlin or not, the Keeper had no real authority over Aes Sedai except what the Ammerlin chose to give her, and most assuredly none to dismiss anyone from the Ammerlin's presence. Yet that look was clearly a dismissal. Elaine rose smoothly, making a deep formal curtsy to Egwene. "If you will excuse me, Mother, I should go find Avienda." Nynaeve, on the other hand, locked eyes with Shiriam until Egwene cleared her throat and slipped the striped stole back into place on her shoulders. Flushing, Nynaeve bobbed to her feet. "I should go, too. Janya said she would talk to me about lost talents." The recovery of those talents was not proving as easy as Egwene had hoped. The sisters were willing enough to talk. The problem was in making Mogedion understand what was meant by a vague description, or sometimes only a name, then hoping she really knew something. All very well to know, for example, that aligning the matrix made metals stronger, but the woman knew less of metals than of healing, and what under the light was spinning earth fire, or for that matter, milking tears. Mogedion seemed eager to help, desperate to, especially since Swan taught the trick of ignoring heat. Apparently she had lied to Nynaeve and Elaine about that. Convinced Egwene would take her for that one lie, the woman had groveled on her knees, weeping and begging, teeth chattering, kissing the hems of their skirts. Eager to help or not, it had raised her fear to new heights. The constant sickening rain of sniveling terror was just too much. Despite her intentions, the Eidam bracelet lay in Egwene's pouch now. She would have given it to Nynaeve now, and glad to be rid of it, but handing the thing back and forth in front of others would occasion comment sooner or later. Instead, she said, "Nynaeve, it might be best for you to avoid Matt until his temper cools." She was not sure that Matt would really carry out his threat, but if anyone could goad him to it, Nynaeve could, and there would be no convincing her after that. "Or at least make sure you only talk to him with a great many people around, perhaps a few warders." Nynaeve opened her mouth, then after a moment closed it again. Her cheeks paled a little and she swallowed. "Yes. Yes, I think that might be best, Mother." Shiriam watched the door close with a small frown that she still wore when she turned to Egwene. "There were hard words, Mother?" "Only what you expect when old friends meet after a long time. Nynaeve remembers Matt as a scamp, but he isn't 10 anymore and he resents it." Bound by the oath against lying, Aes Sedai had carried the half-truth, the quarter-truth, and the implication to arts. Useful arts, in Egwene's opinion, especially with Aes Sedai. The three oaths did no one any favors, least of all Aes Sedai. It's hard sometimes to remember that people change. Taking a chair without being asked, Shiriam arranged her blue silk skirts carefully. I assume whoever commands the Dragonsworn sent young Matt with a message from Randall Thor. I hope you said nothing he might take as a promise, Mother. An army of Dragonsworn not 10 miles distant faces us with a delicate situation. It will not help if their commander believes we are going back on pledges. Egwene studied the other woman a moment. Nothing fazed Shiriam, not that she let anyone see, at least. Shiriam knew quite a lot about Matt. So did several other sisters in Salidar. Could that be used to press him in the right direction, or would it make him bolt? Matt for later, she thought firmly. Shiriam now. Would you ask someone to bring tea, Shiriam? I feel a trifle thirsty. Shiriam's face altered only slightly, just a tightening around those tilted eyes so small that it barely disturbed her apparent serenity. Egwene could almost see the question wanting to pop out, though. What had she said to Matt that she did not want to talk about? What promises had she made that Shiriam was going to have to rescue her from without losing ground to Ramonda or Lelaine? All Shiriam did was say a few words to someone outside, and when she regained her seat, Egwene gave her no opportunity to open her mouth. Instead, she hid her right between the eyes, so to speak. It seems Matt is the commander, Shiriam, and in a way the army is the message. Apparently Rand would like us all to come to him in Camelon. There was some mention of oaths of fealty. Shiriam's head came up, eyes widening. Only partly an outrage at such a suggestion, though. There was a definite tinge of, well, in anyone but an Aes Sedai, Egwene would have called it fear. Very understandable, if so. If she had promised that, and she was from the same village, one of her uses as Amarlin was that she had grown up with Rand. It would be a bottomless mire to get out of. Word would spread no matter what Shiriam did. Some of the hall might well blame it on her, or use it as a pretext anyway. Ramonda and Lelaine were not the only sitters to have cautioned Egwene about following Shiriam's advice without consulting the hall. In truth, Delana was the only one who really seemed to support Shiriam fully, but she counseled listening to Ramonda and Lelaine as well, as if it were really possible to go in three directions at once. And even could the hall be managed, once news of the promise reached Rand and of its withdrawal, he would be 10 times harder to handle, 100 times. Egwene only waited until Shiriam's lips parted, then spoke first again. Of course I told him it was ridiculous. Of course. Shiriam's voice was not quite as steady as it had been. Very good. But you are quite right. The situation is delicate. It's such a pity. Your advice on how to deal with Ramonda and Lelaine was good, but I don't think increasing preparations to move will be enough now. Ramonda had cornered her and grimly lectured her on haste leading to ruin. Gareth Bryn's army must be made larger, large enough for news of its size to intimidate Elida. And, by the way, Ramonda could not emphasize strongly enough once again that the embassies to rulers must be recalled. None but Aes Sedai should be allowed to learn any more of troubles in the tower than could be avoided. Lelaine cared about neither Lord Bryn's army nor rulers. Both were irrelevant, though she did counsel caution and waiting. The proper approaches to Aes Sedai still in the tower would surely yield dividends. Elida could be removed from the Amarlin seat, and Egwene installed in such a fashion that none but a very few sisters would ever be certain what had actually happened. In time, the fact that the White Tower had ever been broken would be taken for no more than a country tale. It might even have worked, if they had had enough time. If waiting did not give Elida just as much chance to work on sisters here. The other difference with Lelaine was she'd said everything with a smile that would have done very well for a pet novice or accepted she was very proud of. Egwene's rediscovery of traveling caused a lot of Aes Sedai to smile, though only a handful were strong enough to make a gateway larger than they could put an arm through, and most not even that. Ramonda wanted to use gateways to remove the oath rod and certain other items. Egwene was not told exactly what, from the tower, so they could make True Eyes Sedain and Salidar while depriving Elida of the ability. Surely Egwene wanted to be truly Eyes Sedai. Lelaine agreed about that last, but not about using gateways in the tower. There was too much chance they might be detected, and if those in the tower learned to travel, too much advantage would be lost. Those points had carried considerable weight with the hall, which did not please Romanda at all. Shiriam had smiled, too, over agreeing with Lelaine about something, but she was not smiling now. "Mother, I am not sure I understand," she said, much too tolerantly. "Preparations are certainly enough to show the hall you will not be bullied. Moving before everything is in place could be disastrous." Egwene managed to put on a disingenuous expression. "I understand, Shiriam. I don't know what I would do without your advice." How she looked forward to the day she could stop this. Shiriam would make a very good keeper. She might even have made a good Ammerlin. But Egwene was going to enjoy the day she could teach the woman that she was keeper, not Ammerlin. Shiriam and the hall. "It's just that now Matt has this army of dragons sworn on our doorstep. What will Lord Bryn do? Or some of his soldiers on their own? Everybody talks about how he wanted to send men to hunt these dragonsworn who were supposed to be burning villages. I know he has been told to keep a tight rein on them, but Lord Garth will do exactly as you command, and no more." "Perhaps." He was not so happy with that tight rein as Shiriam believed. Swan spent a great deal of time with Garth Bryn for all her grumbling about the man, and he told her things. Egwene could not afford to give away Swan's allegiance, though. "I hope the same can be said for every one of his soldiers. We cannot move west into Amadicia, but I thought perhaps we could go down river to Ebu Dar, maybe by gateway. Surely Aes Sedai are welcome there. Lord Bryn could camp outside the city. Moving would emphasize that we aren't going to accept Rand's offer, if it can be called that. And if we are going to make more preparations, I'm sure we would find everything much easier to accomplish in a large city, with roads and ships in and out of the harbor." Shiriam's control slipped again, to the extent of a breathiness in her voice. "Ebu Dar is not so welcoming as that, Mother. A few sisters are quite different from a few hundred, with an army at their backs. Mother, even a hint of that might make Tylin think we meant to seize the city. Tylin and a good many Altaran nobles who would like nothing better than an excuse to topple her and take the throne of the winds for themselves. A tangle of that kind would ruin us with every ruler. No, Mother, it is quite out of the question." "But do we dare remain here now? Matt won't do anything, but all it needs is a handful of Lord Bryn's soldiers deciding to take matters into their own hands." Egwene frowned at her skirts, smoothed them as if thinking worriedly, then sighed. "The longer we sit and do nothing with an army of dragonsworn staring at us, the worse it will be. I won't be surprised to hear rumors they mean to attack us, and people saying we should do for them first." If this did not work, there would be rumors. Nynaeve and Elaine and Swan and Lyanna would see to that. It would be dangerous, but she could find some way to make Matt retreat before sparks flew if it came to that. "Why, the way rumors spread, I wouldn't be surprised if half of Altara thinks we are dragonsworn in under a month." That was one rumor she would have stopped if she knew how. The hall no longer brought nobles to see Loghain since he was healed, but Bryn's recruiters still went out, and parties of Aes Sedai hunting new novices, and men to make the long trek to the nearest villages with their carts and wagons to buy food. 100 paths for that rumor to take, and it only needed one. "Shiriam, I can't help feeling we are in a box, and if we don't get out of it, nothing good will come. Nothing at all good." "The answer is to send the dragonsworn away," Shiriam said, not so patiently as before. "I regret letting Matt out of our hands again, but I fear there's no answer for it. You've told him the offer is refused. Tell him to go." "I wish it were that simple. I don't think he will for asking, Shiriam. He implied he was to wait right where he is until something happens. He could be expecting orders from Rand, or even Rand himself. There was a rumor in Kyrian that he's taken to sometimes traveling with some of those men he's gathered, the ones he's teaching to channel. I do not know what we will do if that happens. Shiriam stared at her, breathing quite heavily for someone with such calm features. A scratching at the door was followed by Tabitha with a beaten silver tray. Not catching the mood, she fussed about, setting the green porcelain teapot and cups just so, the silver honey pot and small pitcher of cream and lace-edged linen napkins, until Shiriam finally snapped at her so fiercely to be about her work that Tabitha squeaked and dropped a wide-eyed curtsy that nearly put her head on the floor and ran. For a moment Shiriam busied herself smoothing her skirts while she regained her composure. "Perhaps," she said finally, reluctantly, "it might be necessary for us to leave Salidar after all, sooner than I could wish." "But the only way left is north." Egwene widened her eyes. Light, but she hated this. "It will seem we're moving toward Tarfallon." "I know that," Shiriam almost snapped. Drawing breath, she moderated her tone. "Forgive me, Mother. I feel a little... I do not like being forced into things, and I fear Randall Thor has forced our hand before we are ready." "I will speak quite severely when I see him," Egwene said. "I can hardly think what I would do without your advice." Perhaps she could find a way to send Shiriam to study with the Wise Ones as an apprentice. The thought of Shiriam after, say, half a year with Cerulea made her smile, so that Shiriam actually smiled back. "Honey or bitter?" Egwene said, lifting the teapot.
Chapter 40. Unexpected Laughter. "You have to help me talk some sense into them," Matt said around his pipe stem. "Tom, are you listening?" They were seated on upended kegs in the scant shade of a two-story house, smoking their pipes, and the lanky old gleeman seemed more interested in staring at the letter Rand had sent on to him. Now he stuffed it into his coat pocket, with the tree and crown seal yet unbroken. The buzz of voices and squeak of axles from the street at the end of the alley seemed distant. Sweat dripped from both their faces. At least one thing was taken care of for the moment. Matt had come out of the little tower to find that a group of Aes Sedai had hauled Avienda away somewhere. She would not be sticking a knife in anybody anytime soon. Tom took his pipe from his mouth. It was a long-stemmed thing, carved all over with oak leaves and acorns.
"I once tried to rescue a woman, Matt. Varitha was a rose in bud, and married to a glowering brute of a bootmaker in a village where I broke my journey for a few days. A brute. He shouted at her if dinner wasn't ready when he wanted to sit down, and took a switch to her if he saw her say more than two words to another man."
"Tom, what in the pit of doom does this have to do with making those fool women see sense?"
"Just listen, boy. How he treated her was common knowledge in the village, but Laritha told me herself, all the while moaning over how she wished someone would rescue her. I had gold in my purse and a fine coach, a driver and a manservant. I was young and good-looking." Tom knuckled his white mustaches and sighed. It was hard to believe that leathery face had ever been good-looking. Matt blinked. A coach? When had a gleeman ever had a coach? "Matt, the woman's plight wrung my heart, and I won't deny her face tugged at it, too. As I said, I was young. I thought I was in love, a hero out of the stories. So one day, sitting beneath a flowering apple tree, well away from the bootmaker's house, I offered to take her away. I'd give her a maid and a house of her own, and court her with songs and verse. When she finally understood, she kicked me in the knee so hard I limped for a month, and hit me with the bench besides."
"They all seem to like kicking," Matt muttered, shifting his weight on the keg. "I suppose she didn't believe you, and who can blame her?"
"Oh, she believed, and was outraged that I thought she would ever leave her beloved husband. her word, beloved. She ran back to the man as fast as her feet would go. And I had the choice of killing him or leaping into my coach. I had to leave behind almost every stitch I owned. I expect she's still living with him, much as before, holding the purse strings tight in her fist and cracking his head open with whatever lies to hand every time he stops into the inn for an ale. As she always had, so I'd learned later from a few discreet inquiries.
He stuck the pipe back between his teeth, as if he had made a point. Matt scratched his head.
I don't see what that has to do with this.
Just that you shouldn't think you know the whole story when you've heard part. For instance, do you know Elaine and Nynaeve will be leaving for Ebu Dar in a day or so? Julin and I are to go along.
Ebu...
Matt barely caught his pipe before it fell into the dead weeds that carpeted the alley. Elysian had told some stories about a visit to Ebu Dar, and even counting in the way he exaggerated when it came to women he had known and fights he had been in, the place sounded rough.
So, they thought they could slip Elaine away from him, did they?
Tom, you have to help me.
What?
Tom broke in.
Steal them away from the bootmaker?
He blew up a streamer of blue smoke.
I won't do that, boy. You still don't know the whole story. How do you feel about Egwene and Nynaeve? On second thought, make that just Egwene.
Matt frowned, wondering whether the man thought he could fuddle everything up by going around in circles long enough.
I like Egwene. Burn me, Tom, she's Egwene! That's enough right there. That's why I'm trying to save her full neck for her.
Save her from her bootmaker, you mean?
Tom murmured, but Matt went right on.
Her neck, and Elaine's as well. Even Nynaeve's, if I can stop from throttling her myself. Light! I only want to help them. Besides, Rand will break my neck if I let anything happen to Elaine.
Have you ever thought of helping them do what they want instead of what you want? If I did what I wanted, I'd have Elaine on a horse and riding to Andor. She needs to do other things. Needs to, I think. So I trot around after her, sweating day and night that somebody will manage to kill her before I can prevent it. She will go to Camelin when she's ready.
He sucked at his pipe complacently, but there was a slight edge to his voice at the end, as if he did not like his words even as much as he pretended.
It seems to me they want to hand their heads to Elida.
So Tom would have that silly wench on a horse, would he? A gleeman hauling the daughter heir off to be crowned. He did have a grand sense of himself, Tom did.
You aren't a fool, Matt, Tom said quietly. You know better. Egwene, it's hard to think of that child as Ommerlin, Matt grunted sourly in agreement. Tom paid him no mind. Yet I believe she has the backbone for it. It's too early to say whether a few things are just happenstance, but I'm beginning to believe she may have the brains as well. The question is she tough enough? If she lacks that, they will eat her alive. Backbone, brains, and all.
Who will? Elida?
Oh, her. If she has the chance, that one lacks nothing for toughness. But the Aes Sedai right here hardly think of Egwene as Aes Sedai. Ommerlin, maybe, but not Aes Sedai, hard as that is to believe.
Tom shook his head.
I don't understand, but it's true. The same for Elaine and Nynaeve. They try to keep it among themselves, but even Aes Sedai don't hide as much as they think, if you watch close and keep your wits about you.
He pulled out that letter again, just turning it over in his hands without looking at it.
Egwene is walking the edge of a precipice, Matt. And three factions right here in Saladar, three that I'm sure of, might push her over if she makes one wrong step. Elaine will follow if that happens, and Nynaeve. Or maybe they'll push them over first to pull her down.
Right here in Saladar, Matt said, flat as a planed board.
Tom nodded calmly, and Matt could not stop his voice from rising.
And you want me to leave them here?
I want you to stop thinking you're going to make them do anything. They've decided what they are going to do, and you can't change it. But maybe, just maybe, you can help me keep them alive.
Matt jumped to his feet. In his head was an image of a woman with a knife stuck between her breasts. Not one of the borrowed memories. He kicked the keg he had been sitting on, sending it rolling along the alley. Help a gleeman keep them alive. A faint memory stirred, something about Basil Gill, an innkeeper in Camelin, saying something about Tom. But it was like mist, gone as soon as he tried to hold it. Who's the letter from, Tom? Another woman you rescued? Or did you leave her where she could get her head cut off?
I left her, Tom said softly.
Rising, he walked away without another word. Matt half reached out to stop him, started to speak. Only he could not think of what to say.
Crazy old man.
No, he was not crazy. Egwene was mule stubborn, and Nynaeve made her look biddable. Worse, either would climb a tree to see the lightning better. As for Elaine, noblewomen never had enough sense to come in out of the rain. And then they were indignant when they got wet. Tapping out his pipe, he crushed the embers under heel before the dry weeds could catch, then caught up his hat from the ground and limped out to the street. He needed information from a better source than a gleeman who had delusions of grandeur from running around with that stuck-up chit of a daughter heir. Down to his left, he saw Nynaeve coming out of the little tower and started toward her, winding between loaded carts drawn by oxen or horses. She could tell him what he needed to know, if she would. His hip gave him a twinge.
Burn me, she owes me a few answers.
Just then, Nynaeve caught sight of him and stiffened visibly. For a moment, she watched him approach, then abruptly hurried off in the other direction, plainly trying to avoid him. She looked over her shoulder twice before people and carts hit her. He stopped, scowling, and pulled his hat low. First the woman kicked him for no reason. Now she would not talk to him. They meant to let him stew, her and Egwene, until he would trot off meekly when they pointed a finger.
Well, they chose the wrong man for their game, burn their hides.
Vannon and the others were outside a stable beside a stone building that had surely been an inn once. Aes Sedai streamed in and out of it now. Pips and the rest of their horses were tied to a hitching rail, and Vannon and the two scouts who had been captured were squatting against the wall. Mar and Ladwin were as different as men could be, one tall, lanky, and rough-faced, the other short, stocky, and mild-seeming. But both looked plain embarrassed when Matt walked up. Neither had gotten over the ease of his capture. The two squadmen stood stiffly, still holding the banners tied against their staffs, as if there was any point to it now. They looked more than a little apprehensive. A battle was one thing. All these Aes Sedai were quite another. A man had a chance in battle. There were two warders watching them, not openly, and from across the stable yard, but they had not just picked that spot, standing in the full sun, to talk. Matt stroked Pips's nose, then after a moment began to examine the horse's eyes. A fellow in a leather vest came out of the stable, shoving a dung barrow up the street. Vannon walked over to peer into Pips's eye. Not looking at him, Matt said, "Could you reach the band?"
"Maybe."
Vannon frowned and lifted Pips's eyelid.
"With a little luck, maybe. Hate to leave my horse, though."
Matt nodded, looking closer at the eye.
"Tell Talmanis I said to sit tight. I may be staying here a few days, and I don't want any bloody attempted rescue. Try to make it back here. Without being seen, if you can."
Vannon spat into the dust under Pips.
"Man mixes with Aes Sedai, he's bridled himself and put a saddle on his back. I'll be back when I can."
Shaking his head, he strolled off into the crowd, a fat, rumpled man with a rolling walk who no one could suspect of being able to sneak. One of the squadmen cleared his throat hesitantly and stepped closer.
"My lord, is everything, this is what you planned, isn't it, my lord?"
"Right to the plan, Verdon," Matt said, patting Pips. He was headfirst in a sack and the strings tied tight. He had promised Rand to see Elaine safe to Camelin, and he could not leave without her. And he could not go off and let Egwene stretch her neck on the chopping block, either.
"It might be,
light how it rankled. It might be that he was going to have to take Tom's advice. Try to keep those bloody women's bloody heads on their bloody shoulders by somehow helping them make this whole mad impossible scheme actually work. While trying to keep his own neck in one piece, incidentally. And that left out keeping Avienda from Elaine's throat. Well, at the least, he could be around to get them away when it all fell apart. Small comfort that was. Everything is just bloody fine.
Elaine expected to find Avienda in the waiting room or maybe outside, but she hardly had to listen to discover why she was in neither place. There were two topics of conversation among the other Aes Sedai, and everyone was talking, with papers lying abandoned on the tables. Matt occupied most tongues. Even the servants and novices bustling about the waiting room paused in running errands to exchange words about him. He was Taviran. Was it safe to let a Taviran remain in Salidar? Had he really been in the tower and simply allowed to go? Was it true he commanded the Dragonsworn army? Was he to be arrested for the atrocities they had heard of? Was it true he came from the same village as the Dragon Reborn and the Ammerlin? There were rumors of two Taviran connected to the Dragon Reborn. Who was the second and where could he be found? Maybe Matt Cawthon knew. There seemed to be as many opinions as there were people to give them. There were two questions Elaine expected to hear and did not. What did Matt want in Salidar, and how had Rand known where to send him? Nobody asked them, but here an Aes Sedai suddenly shifted her shawl as if